Blog Talk Radio.
Now we can see a new world coming into view. A world in which there is a very real prospect of a new world order.
The new world order does not mean surrendering our national sovereignty or forfeiting our interests.
Oh, shit.
He took an oath to defend the Constitution of the United States of America. By some, he's been called controversial.
How can I convince you when your ears refuse to hear?
Now, keep in mind that some of my guests have been approached by Homeland Security or FBI saying, why are you going on the Clay Douglas Show?
My message to those guys, if they're listening this morning, is good morning. Go get a cup of coffee. Maybe you'll learn something.
Yeah, sit down. I'm always invited you. I hope you come into my lecture, man. You know, we both took the same oath to defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. I don't recall there being an expiration date on that.
He is the free American, Clay Douglas.
How can I contain this anguish and this pain?
Catch the Free American weekday mornings at 10 a.m. Eastern, 7 a.m. Pacific. For the podcast and more details, go to freeamerican.com.
Every time I think about the damage that's been done,
good morning again there, ladies and gentlemen. And I have no idea what happened there. Somebody tapped into the Blog Talk line there. I had no control over it, no way to get them off, and not even a way to hang up. Couldn't get them off. I had to reboot my whole machine there. Had to redo, assistant producer there in the chat room. Don't know who you are. Get the fuck out of my room. I don't know who was doing that. Don't know who was that. And let's see, who else? Robert from Omaha, I should surrender to the trolls, huh? Fuck you. Get out of my room. No, they haven't defeated me, you ignorant son of a bitch. And you're gone there. LW, welcome. Welcome back. Don't know what that song was. I didn't play it. Didn't listen to it long enough. Blog Talk moderator, get the fuck out of my room. You're not with Blog Talk. You're one of the trolls that tried to take this over. No, I don't think Markov is up to this. Markov wouldn't pull anything like that. You better shut the fuck up, Monica. I'm really disgusted with you anyway. I got all your messages here, how my show wasn't doing this, wasn't doing about that. And, you're a piece of shit as far as I'm concerned from what you said to me in your emails. So just sit there and shut up or I'll kick your ass next. You understand that, bitch? Now, I don't know how they got into that. I started using the direct line so they couldn't block my or knock my phones off the hook. If I see another word from you, Monica, I'll kick your ass. You just lost it, Clay. Oh, you did this, you did that, Clay. I remember everything you fucking wrote, bitch. I'm not going to repeat it. I hear another word about you, and I'll kick your goddamn ass so far out of my room, man, you'll make your head spin. You understand that, bitch? I don't know who these other people are, but I'm just starting to kick out of here. You really pissed me off this time, man. You start interfering with my show like that. Beyond my control, out of my hands. And I don't need a cute skin here. Get out. And are you guests in here? Well, I'm going to do it. Let's hear from Buzz Aldrin. Buzz, come on here and let's do what we started to do, what I planned on doing. Buzz Aldrin, former Apollo 11 astronaut.
The monolith that's on Phobos has been talked about for many, many years. And I believe that this structure, which, first of all, it's miles high, number one. You can tell by the shadow.
Billy Carson, wait a minute. Back it up. Back it up. I want to hear.
Vertically out of this oblong.
Let me hear Buzz first. Let me hear Buzz. Why are you being hostile for him? Because of what you wrote, bitch. What you wrote in my email. Tell me how I was losing it, how I wasn't going to listen to it. This is Martian refugees. I told you, if you said anything else, I'm going to kick you. Now you're saying something else? You want to get your ass kicked? Better shut the fuck up.
Perhaps the most intriguing planet in the solar system is Mars. For years, there's been speculation as to whether or not there was an active civilization on the planet. In the late 19th century, Giovanni Schiaparelli thought he saw a canal network on the planet. Later, Percival Lowell would also make the same claim. The famous scientist Nikola Tesla thought he was hearing radio signals from Mars.
Mars was something that was always seen as potentially being a interesting place to go. In the older days, people who were looking at it with primitive telescopes believed they were seeing canali, or canals, that were large areas that were built intelligently. So there's always been this pull towards Mars. Of course, as the telescopes got better, the canal theory was originally disproven.
In 1726, Jonathan Swift wrote his satire, Gulliver's Travels, in which he relates that Mars has two moons. More than 150 years later, two moons were discovered orbiting Mars. They're called Phobos and Deimos. These two moons are one of the most mysterious aspects of our Mars exploration.
Take the moons of Mars. They are two very small rocks. I mean, they wouldn't cause an eclipse at all. I mean, they're small. They're not even round like our moon. And those moons are very strange. They orbit in an opposite direction. Early on as well, a number of scientists, including Soviet scientists, suggested that the moons of Mars were artificial somehow because they just didn't seem like natural objects that have been planned in the past. If there is some habitation there, it would probably, again, be inside of those moons. And those moons may well be called objects.
We should go boldly where man has not gone before.
Buzz Aldrin,
man. Comets, visit asteroids, visit the moon of Mars. There's a monolith. They're a very unusual structure on this little potato-shaped object. When people find out about that, they're going to say, who put that there? Who put that there? Well, the universe.
The monolith that's on Phobos has been talked about for many, many years. And I believe that this structure, which, first of all, it's miles high, number one. You can tell by the shadow. It's very easy to get a size on this. So you see that it's a supermassive structure coming up vertically out of this oblong type of a moon. Could have been a lookout overseeing the planet. It could have had many, many functional purposes, but I just don't believe it's a natural rock formation.
In 2009, a photograph was taken by one of the Mars probes of something on Mars that appeared to be sticking straight up out of the sand. Since then, numerous photographs have been taken of it. There's four or five different... the monolith from 2001, A Space Odyssey. It has the exact same height, width, and proportion. It's casting a shadow that indicates it has this rectangular monolithic shape. And to me, the weirdest part of it is when you look at it, there's sort of a raised mound around it that it's sitting in. And when you look at the footage from 2001, where they uncover the monolith on the moon, there's this raised mound where they've dug out around the thing, and the monolith is sticking in it. And, you know, in the film, they say the only thing we know about it for sure, sir, is that it's about 4 million years old and it appears to have been deliberately buried. And if you look at the photographs of the monolith on Phobos, you can see that the mound upon which this thing is inserted is a different color than the soil around it. It's much darker. That is an indication that somebody dug up the soil and put it around this thing to bury it, to keep it there. So it appears to be, like the monolith in 2001, an object that was deliberately buried.
And hasn't been covered up by natural erosion or other forces. It seems to have been deliberately buried.
Deliberately buried.
Deliberately buried.
There's a lot of evidence pointing to the fact that Phobos may not be a real moon, that it may be an actual artificial structure. First of all, the moon itself has been scanned, and it actually appears to be hollow. This is actual real data coming from the official space agency. Now, also, on top of that, the moon is actually losing its orbit. It's actually slightly degrading in orbit, which means it doesn't have enough mass to sustain itself, and that again tells you and verifies the fact that it may be a hollow moon. Now, when you look at very close images of this moon, if you want to call it that, you can see these what looks like weapons fire. It doesn't look like just random rocks were hitting it and you have little tiny pockets there. It looks like it was like when something just came across it and fired at it several times. And there's even octagonal and hexagonal anomalies on the surface of this thing, which if you were to maybe get a lot of that ancient dust off, there may be something you can see through there, or there may be some technology there as well.
And then there's the oddball photos from the Soviet space missions there in the late 80s, where they sent their own probe to Mars, which was also called Phobos, and it took a photo of this huge airship moving along, right along Phobos. In fact, the airship itself was bigger than the moon. Phobos has always been this really interesting body in the solar system. It's supposedly a moon of Mars. It appears to really just be nothing more than an asteroid. But the interesting thing about it is, as far back as 1989, when it was first photographed by the Phobos 2 probe the Russians sent up, you can see this weird wire mesh kind of cross-hatching pattern on it, even in those early images. And now when we go with newer probes like Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter and Mars Global Surveyor, the ESA's Mars Express mission, they take photographs of Phobos, and we can now see in great detail that there are lines on this body running at 90-degree angles, and that's just not possible. They're caused by boulders. I don't know how the boulders on Phobos run at 90-degree angles to each other. It's just a very, very weird phenomenon, but it fits with the idea that actually what's happening is that Phobos has this underlying sort of cross-hatching 90-degree mesh.
I think Phobos, given its orbit around Mars and its size, it's not an object that would be captured in a way a conventional moon would be captured by a planet. It's orbiting too close to Mars. And that would be indicative of some kind of artificial construction of Phobos. And that any space probes that try to get too close to simply blown out of the sky.
Many well-known scientists, like the late Carl Sagan, have speculated that a hollowed-out asteroid might make the best and safest vehicle for long-term space travel. The hard rock surface would protect inner inhabitants from radiation and the occasional strike from another asteroid. But is there an easy way to hollow out an asteroid?
How would you create a hollow moon? Well, here's how you would do it. You'd go to the asteroid belt, grab yourself a nice big asteroid, and with your super technology and whatnot, your tractor beam, you bring it to Mars or the Earth or whatever, and then, like a glass blower blows glass, you would take that asteroid, make it a molten blob, and then blow it up as molten rock, and it will solidify. And it, you know, could be a round shape like our moon, or more sort of oddball shapes like Phobos and Deimos are. But then you're gonna have a craft that's solid and sturdy, and a cavity inside it which could be occupied. And it may well be that the moons of Mars are like that, hollow, and hollow moons also possibly hollow too.
While the moons of Mars are intriguing, there are many odd things on the surface of Mars that deserve closer attention.
Well, there's a lot of evidence that Mars at some point in its history was very fertile and habitable. That's something that scientists now widely agree on, that their study of Mars' atmosphere and the surface shows that there were once vast flowing water on Mars, that there's vegetation on Mars, and much more oxygen than there is now. So there's agreement that millions of years ago that Mars was a very lush, fertile place. We know that there have been a number of whistleblowers who have come forward to talk about Mars actually being a place that is populated by extraterrestrial civilization. What I find fascinating is that the CIA actually was also interested in this, and they got one of their remote viewers, Joseph McGonagall, to remote view ancient Mars. And this is actually one of the CIA files that was recently released on the CIA website. It's called CREST. And so there you can actually read the data where the remote viewer, who we know now is McGonagall, but who's unidentified in this document, talks about the civilization on Mars fleeing Mars during some great cataclysmic events that is destroying the surface, or the environment and the atmosphere on Mars is all being destroyed through some great cataclysm. The refugees are being taken to some other world, and it's described as a very kind of a volcanically active world, which tends to fit what the Earth would have been like, say, 500,000 to a million years ago, much more active volcanically, especially in places like Antarctica.
In 1975, NASA launched the Viking probe to Mars to photograph the surface of the planet. The mission imaged an odd artifact on the surface that looked like a human face. It became known as the face on Mars.
What we see is an enigmatic face formation. Now, this has been hotly disputed ever since the face first came out. But we also have seen comic books going back to 1956 by guys like Jack Kirby that are called The Face on Mars, in which the comic, which was called Race to the Moon, that was intended to get people to want to support all this massive government expenditure for the creation of the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, or NASA, it's giving us an incentive to think that we might find some really cool architecture out there. And it shows us this thing called The Face on Mars. And it looks exactly like what the face really was.
There's no real reason why Mars couldn't have had that civilization even today. It could hold some kind of civilization. You know, there's water there and an atmosphere. And in fact, some people, like George Leonard and others, have suggested that there's atmosphere on the moon. That our moon and Mars is, you know, are not so different. Or that desert planets, and that, but though Mars has a lot more water. And then they're saying that the moon has water too. How incredible is that? So the idea is even that there's, I believe there is life on the moon, but that's going to be a more of a high-tech, space-based type of thing. And probably what perhaps is on Mars, too. But we may well find that there's some kind of strange underground on Mars. And this is really what you're going to do in extreme environments, and what we do in Antarctica, too. You don't have to go too far underneath a planet to find
stable, cool areas that don't have large temperature fluctuations. And it's quite possible with explosive devices to create giant glass-lined caverns anywhere you want them, just by detonating a nuclear device of some kind.
John Brandenburg has done some studies on Mars, and he shows that there are isotopes in the atmosphere of Mars, which is indicative of a nuclear war having occurred at some point in Mars' history. So you have some credible scientific data showing that you actually have nuclear weapons being used on Mars. So there's evidence there that there was an ancient civilization. You know, Richard Hoagland has done a lot of work in terms of identifying the face on Mars as being artificially created, pyramids on Mars being artificially created. So there's a lot of kind of information that you get from NASA images and NASA probes on Mars that support Mars actually once being populated. What we've got more recently is a few whistleblowers who have come forward to talk about their experiences on Mars. So these whistleblowers are all familiar with bases on Mars that have been created since the 1940s, and they date them to this kind of early German colonization program that began out of Antarctica. And this is a critical part of our history. Then in the 1940s and the 1950s especially, that a large number of German colonists first established bases on Mars, and then in the 50s and the 60s, after agreements were reached with the Eisenhower administration, the U.S. military industrial complex began collaborating comprehensively with the German space program out of Antarctica and transporting large amounts of equipment and personnel to Mars to build up these bases down over there. And so today, on Mars, there are estimates of many millions of people up there with multiple bases developing incredibly advanced technologies, far more advanced than we would ever think possible on the Earth, and so advanced that it's said that up to 900 different extraterrestrial civilizations are trading with the Mars colonists up there, who are basically controlled by a corporation called the Interplanetary Corporate Conglomerate.
There are whistleblowers who have come forth with new evidence of the history of that planet and its interaction with Earth are revealing a far more complex past than previously thought.
We know that apparently Germans got to the Martian landscape as early as the late 1930s with their reverse-engineered spacecraft. They'd gotten help from Draco and from various Nordics to build, and they saw this enigmatic landform. It's a mile and a half wide. It's a big mesa, and it totally looks like a human face. And what's even stranger is that it looks like a human face on the left-hand side, and on the right-hand side, it looks like a lion. Now, what's really weird about this is that when you go into the Old Testament in the Bible and you read the book of Ezekiel, starting around Ezekiel 40, begins describing his vision of this new civilization, this new earth that's going to be formed. And that vision of the new city is directly carried over into the revelation of St. John in the New Testament. It's the same idea. It was inspired by Ezekiel. One of the most enigmatic parts of that section of Ezekiel is where he is describing that this new beautiful crystal city has pillars on it that have the face of a cherub or a man on one side and the face of a lion on the other. It's right in the Bible. Half man, half lion. Why the heck is the book of Ezekiel talking about the formation of the face on Mars? Why does the face on Mars have a man and lion shape? And we also see that with the Sphinx, which is a lion's body with a man's head on it. And there's plenty of sphinxes throughout ancient Egypt. This all suggests that the civilization that is now on Earth is partly derived from a surviving group of fallen angels that had lived on Mars, that blew themselves up in a war, and that eventually crash-landed on Earth, as described in the Book of Enoch. That these
were those who from heaven to earth came. These were the 200 fallen angels that crash landed here. Where they crash landed apparently was Antarctica, before it was covered by ice, because there's a big pyramid down there, a very large pyramid, much bigger than the original one that we think of in Giza. And this is much older. It was built in a very ancient time, and that below where that pyramid is a vast build-out of habitable underground civilization. So people kept trying to land there to be able to colonize it, and there's wars with the Draco and other groups shooting them down if they try to get close because they don't want anybody to get in there. So Antarctica was the pilgrimage site that led to these people who survived Mars that were giants that had elongated skulls crash landing here and becoming the fallen angels.
I think it was the Martians that basically colonized Atlantis, that was the Martians that ended up on the moon, and that they eventually began colonizing Antarctica. Now, they probably did it in successive ways. I think some of the Martians would have gone to the moon, spent extended periods of time there because it was more suited as an artificial object that could accommodate millions of refugees if necessary. And so after the great catastrophe, I think the Martians, some of them ended up on this moon, some of them traveled to the Earth and established colonies on Earth, probably in Antarctica because it's the CIA remote viewing documents back at the place that was identified as being very, very volcanic was Antarctica, especially around places like Mount Erebus, which we know is volcanically very, very active now, and there are other volcanic hotspots. This is a place that I think is where the first Martian colonists landed, and later on you have more Martians arriving via the moon and establishing a global civilization around 60,000 years ago that became known as Atlantis.
I think that there probably was some past civilization on Mars. More and more, we're seeing images from Mars that defy common sense. And there's one that's come out recently that clearly looks like a base. You can see a dome there. You can see what looks like a satellite dish. There's no way that that would normally be something that would just be a rock. Now, granted, a lot of people look at rocks and they think they've seen something. And a lot of that stuff is bunk, but there's also stuff that's very compelling. NASA has shown us these glass tubes that clearly look like they're made of glass, do not at all look like something that naturally occur. And we've heard from insiders that if you use nuclear-controlled underground drills, that as they go along, they superheat the rock and turn it into glass, and they become glass tubes. In fact, if they just drive through at a steady speed, the tubes all have the same consistency, and then when there's an earthquake, they will break and collapse in over a long period. So what they learned is they had to drive a little bit and then stop and let it melt more glass in one area and then drive again and stop, and this creates the appearance of rings, which is exactly what we see in the glass tubes of Mars. Same thing. So why is NASA releasing this type of data? Why are they showing us things that clearly defy a natural explanation? I believe that the people who are behind NASA have a religious fervor about Mars. They see this as their planet of origin.
When you see movies like, say, the first Total Recall movie, which was a pretty interesting movie, having all kinds of elements of mind control going to Mars, they too, in that movie, they're occupying Mars, but again, it's mainly underground. And they're in these underground cities. Mars has some kind of prison planet and a place that we are exiled to or something like that. I mean, that's a fascinating idea.
It's just a terrible thought. What if this is a dream?
If these people remembered their civilization, they would have carried that record with them, and they would have built various temples in an homage to who they had been before. They build pyramids that look like what they have. So when you go to Mars, what do you see? You not only see this face that has a man on one side, a lion on the other side, if you go immediately south, you see a gigantic pyramid, a pyramid that is clearly five-sided pentagonal. And you see on the corners of the Pentagon, these buttresses, these little
spherical-looking areas that would actually support the beams and give them strength, just like we see in the construction of cathedrals. They do the same thing. But what's weirder is it's not a perfect pentagon. It's a pentagon where the center that the lines converge on is a little bit up from the middle. And sure enough, if you actually put Da Vinci's Vitruvian Man over that shape, it is the shape of a human being rendered out as a pyramid. The head is the top, the two arms would be the two top sides, and then the 2 feet spread out would be the two bottom sides. So it's a pyramid designed in the shape of a human being, just like you see a human being's face over here. Richard Hoagland talked about the idea that this could be an arcology, meaning that it could be a vast civilization inside that pyramid. You could have millions of people living inside an object of this incredibly immense size. And also, if you go immediately west of the face and you see another city of what clearly look like pyramids. In fact, there's one in particular that looks exactly like an aerial view of the Great Pyramid of Giza. The likelihood that those objects are all randomly placed, that they are just... trick of light and shadow or normal geological features, it doesn't make any sense. Hoagland brought in experts like Gerald Torin, who concluded that the actual amount of geometric anomalies in this area is much higher than any other surrounding area of Mars. It is a highly unique area that is consistent with the same type of algebra you would get if you were analyzing an artificial human-built settlement surrounded by a desert. It's the same kind of thing. It's all these anomalies. So you have the face, which could in fact be a very large building that people could live in on its own. You have a city of pyramids off to the west, and then the sun rises in the east, and it would rise above the face. So this suggests that the face was also some sort of religious symbol and could in fact have been an homage to their great leader, who had such a big ego that he wanted to build this gigantic image of his own face. The lion half of the face is also interesting, because what we've heard is that way before this civilization arose on Mars, there was something called the ancient builder race, that it was much older. And there is more than a little bit of evidence that those people may have looked like leonine humanoids, that they had lion-type features, instead of what we would more think of as like a simian work. So if you do, in fact, have lion-type people, then what we heard is that the people from Mars had identified many of these ancient ruins that had images of people with the lion face, and they had pyramids and obelisks, and the Martians actually built their own pyramids and their own obelisks and their own half-man, half-lion sculpture as a form of worship to what they saw as their gods. And they continued to do this after they came to Earth, building things like the Sphinx and the pyramids in Egypt. And in fact, we see pyramids built all over the planet. Every major continent other than Antarctica already has pyramids on it. And Antarctica now is looking like it has pyramids as well. And there might be even a lot more waiting for us under the ice.
The Martian story is only now becoming known in its entirety. We're beginning to realize that there's much more to the red planet than previously considered. With people like Elon Musk trying to mount a manned mission to Mars within the next few years, perhaps our knowledge of the past and present as a fourth planet from the sun will become known to all. In our next episode, we go back to Earth to explore the Paul Benowitz mystery.
All right. They're telling me my PIN number there was for Blog Talk was hacked. I will have that fixed almost immediately. Thank you. Can't believe that's the one I wrote. Let me see for a second here. This is the one I wrote.
Them nearby. But if you put a piece of glass in the way which blocks ultraviolet light, those little eggs do not wither and die like they normally would. So ultraviolet light seems to be the key. But what carries the ultraviolet light is this torsion field. It's this light pipe of something in gravity. So when the moon is gating in, we have this weird full moon effect leading to the word lunatic, among other things, because it's a moon-related phenomenon. What we're also seeing goes a lot further than just the full moon madness. It gets into occult rites of the elite, where they are deliberately similar types of alignments. And what these insiders have actually told me is that the moon itself has these pathogenic spirits inside of them, and those spirits can telepathically contact us much more readily during these alignments. So people will deliberately structure ritual ceremonies to try to interface with that lunar consciousness, to try to download more of what it has. As part of their belief also is that if you can conceive a baby during these alignments, that its DNA will resonate more with whatever is in the moon and thus help that lunar consciousness to embody more into the DNA. Another way you can look at the moon being full and the pathogenic effect that it might have is that in some way the resonance of the moon is taking these photons from the sun that are hitting it, and the reflected photons are now being encoded with whatever pathogenic AI is in the moon. And thus, when the moonlight hits us, we're actually experiencing some resonance with the consciousness in the moon. Now, I admit a lot of this stuff sounds told me this, take it very seriously, and they see themselves as literally in a fight to the death against the people on this planet who believe this stuff and who are deliberately doing ceremonies to try to gate into whatever evil they think is inside the moon. The widespread prevalence of insider knowledge about there potentially being this ancient evil inside the moon has also led to something you hear from a lot of insiders, the idea that in some cases people's souls may be getting attracted into the moon when they die. And in fact, the noted Western mystic Gurdjieff did say that the moon was a soul trap and that you should avoid going near it in the afterlife state after your death, because you could be sucked into some kind of reincarnation experience. We also see this, of course, in the work of Philip K. Dick, where he wrote the book Valis, and it appeared, Valis meaning Vast Active Living Information System, that Valis really was connected to the moon. The Vast Active Living Information System is something inside the moon, and he was very worried about this connection as well. So this is a prevalent thing that you hear about on the inside track. And many of the insiders I've spoken to have said that there is so much data storage inside the moon. The storage space, the computing power, is so bad that apparently the Draco reptilians use this as their central mainframe. And they're storing all this surveillance intel on multiple worlds of billions of people that they're trying to conquer and invade. All of that data is being stored inside the moon. And we also hear, through the work of Corey Good and others, that once we get this big solar flash that we're expecting at the end of this age, that that will essentially wipe the hard drive of the moon. It's an electromagnetic pulse that wipes out the AI in our solar system, and therefore whatever nasty stuff is inside the moon is apparently on the verge of getting wiped out by this event, and it knows it and is very concerned about it. Therefore, it is fighting like crazy for its own survival in the last few years that it has left.
Through this exploration of our lunar cousin, it can be revealed that the moon is one of the strangest objects that humans have examined in their quest to conquer outer space. It appears to have been placed in orbit around the Earth so that life could thrive here. It might be hollow, and it could even be Noah's Ark. While no human has supposedly gone to the moon for almost 45 years, it's heartening to realize that several countries are ramping up programs to explore the moon again. Possibly, these programs will answer some of the questions that linger concerning our moon. In our next episode, we'll continue our exploration of the solar system as we visit the planet Mars.
The rise of the artificial moon.
On July 29, 1953, John O'Neill, science editor for the New York Tribune, discovered a 12-mile-long bridge in the area on the moon known as Mars Pythium. He contacted the Association of Lunar and Planetary Observers with this finding. While O'Neill said in public that he knew to question whether the bridge was artificial. As soon as he announced this discovery, O'Neill was attacked by skeptical scientists. That was until famed British astronomer H.P. Wilkins confirmed that he too had seen the mysterious bridge. Later, astronomer Patrick Moore also reported seeing the structure. What is very odd about this strange story is that the bridge slowly began to disappear, as if it were morphing into the surface of the moon. Now, today, there is no trace of what these famous astronomers saw. In the 1960s, NASA compiled a list of strange sightings on the moon, as seen by reputable astronomers going back to the dawn of the telescope, called a chronological catalog of lunar events. The report reveals hundreds of strange objects moving on the surface, with odd light seen in the dark of the moon, and even clouds and mist streaming across its exterior. Our nearest neighbor in space, the moon, has long baffled scientists. When considered, it is truly one of the more enigmatic members of our solar system. These oddities include the fact that the moon and the Earth are the largest planet-moon system in the solar system, the moon being about one quarter the size of the Earth. The moon has an odd orbit, which means that the same side of the moon is always facing Earth. No one but the astronauts had actually ever seen the far side of the moon with their own eyes.
It also, interestingly enough, has a tidal lock with the Earth. The moon orbits the Earth and it always faces the Earth the same way. And you may not have thought about this before, but what's one of the interesting things that happens with that? You could always do things on the backside of the moon. You could do very elaborate construction projects. You could have very bright things going on. All these bright buildings, highways, roads, it could look like Manhattan. There could be all these ships coming and going, and you would never see it because you only see one side facing the Earth.
Perhaps one of the oddest coincidences is the strange fact that the moon and the sun, from the perspective of the Earth, appear to be the same size. That's because the moon is 1/400 the size of the sun, and is exactly 1/400 the distance between the Earth and the sun. This is what gives us solar eclipses, where we can see this incredible coincidence for ourselves.
Not only does it rotate in such a way as to always keep one face to the Earth, which is unusual enough, but possibly explained, but even stranger still is that when the moon eclipses the disk of the sun and transits it, it's a perfect eclipse. Our moon is of such a size and distance from the Earth that during the eclipse, the disk of the moon is transiting the disk of the sun. And during the complete eclipse, the moon disk is perfectly, not more and not less, covering the disk of our sun. Now that our moon is arbitrarily in that orbit, to not more or not less eclipse the sun, but to perfectly eclipse the sun,
which suggests that our moon is actually in an artificial orbit around our planet. Because to just capture some moon or even that it would just form, you know, like the planet forms, in that orbit and that size, the odds are a zillion to one.
There are some very strange anomalies about the moon's orbit that are undeniable. And one of them is that the apparent diameter of the moon and the apparent diameter of our sun from Earth is almost precisely the same. And you might say, well, that's not a big deal, but the interesting point is that it causes this corona phenomenon to occur when we have a total solar eclipse. You see this perfect ring of light around the moon. Now, what are the likelihoods that that could be strictly a function of chance? It seems very, very small.
The moon, I believe, is tidal locked in orbit, which, by the way, is very rare in our solar system, number one, proves to me intelligent placement. And I think intriguing being, in order to sustain life on this planet in a way that makes it extremely comfortable for thinking. Keep Earth from rocking on its axis, number one, because you have severe storms, severe wind gusts in different places, tides run up into land and destroy property and so forth. The moon actually really balances out the Earth's weather and everything else. A lot of people don't know that. The moon, from our perspective on Earth, you only see one side of the face, and it rotates at the same speed as Earth is rotating, so we only get to see that same side. So what it allows is for clandestine operations on the what they call the dark side of the moon, which really is not dark. We call it dark because it's on the far side that we can't see, but technically, because the moon has its own rotation on its own axis, all sides. Where potentially there is clandestine operations, maybe even ancient bases, maybe even now current bases there. Now, cut away from human eyes here on Earth.
But the moon and the Earth are a weird system because they're so close in size. And so it's really rare for a body as small as the Earth with as minimal a gravitational field as it has to be able to actually lock a body like that into a tidal lock arrangement. It's very easy for Saturn and Jupiter, which are much more massive, to be able to maybe grab an object or even fission off a moon and keep it in a tidal locked relationship. So I wonder, when I see that, if maybe it wasn't moved in place and the Earth actually sort of robbed it of its spin momentum at some point, to the point that it now shows only one side of itself, the Earth. But it doesn't seem like an arrangement that could have come about naturally. It just doesn't really add up.
Scientists cannot agree on the origins of the moon. There are several theories, but none of them adequately explains everything concerning the moon. The first is the fission theory, which says that a chunk of the Earth broke off and condensed into the moon. The problem with this theory is that it does not explain the 4,000-degree baking that the moon's surface endured at some point in its past. If the moon had formed nearby the Earth, then our planet would have gone through this baking heat also, but there's no evidence for this on Earth. The second theory is the capture theory, in which the Earth somehow captured the moon as it was whizzing by. The problem with this theory is that it's unlikely, because it would have had to happen in a very exact way, otherwise the moon would have crashed into the Earth. The third theory is the condensation theory, that says the Earth and the Moon condensed at the same time from material in the solar system. The problem with this theory is that, if it were true, the Moon would be as dense as the Earth. The fourth and most recent theory is that a planet like Mars crashed into the Earth breaking off a chunk, which then reformed into the moon. The problem here is that the isotopes for the Earth and the moon are identical. This would not be the case if a planet had crashed into the Earth. So science is left in a quandary, considering how the moon was created and how it arrived here. The biggest concern was the fact that the moon's density is far less than that of Earth. Though the moon is a little less than a third the size of the Earth, it weighs far less. The Earth is 81 times heavier than the moon. It is this fact that baffles scientists the most.
Of course, there are several different theories about how the moon was formed. One of them is that the Earth was hit by a Mars-sized object and all this stuff went out and gathered together at this particular orbit and then started circling around the Earth. But the bottom line is, if you actually look at the data, you can see that the moon is actually receding from the Earth, indicating that it may have actually been fissioned off by the Earth at one point. And the fact is that right now there's no really good theories for how the moon got there. We know the capture theory doesn't work. The fission theory has some issues, although it's my favorite. And the collision theory is just absolute nonsense because of the fact that the isotopic ratios of the lunar soil that we brought back, the elements in it, they match the Earth. That indicates that they're not from somewhere else. You'd have a mixture if the moon was actually formed from the Earth itself and another alien body.
In 1970, Michael Vassin and Alexander Shcherbakov of the Soviet Academy of Sciences advanced a hypothesis that the moon was a spaceship built by extraterrestrials or possibly humans in the past. The article, published in Sputnik magazine, was titled, Is the Moon the Creation of Alien Intelligence? Their theory relies on the idea that large lunar craters, which are thought to be created from meteor impact, are generally far too shallow and have flat or even convex bottoms. The two scientists theorize that large meteors are drilling through the rocky layer and hitting an armored hull underneath the surface of the moon.
Another very compelling notion is the idea that the craters are not deep enough. We see these large mares, as they're called, these large seas, and if you look at these so-called man on the moon, you're looking at the moon when it's full, you see these dark areas, some people stylize. Those dark areas are actually not very deep compared to the rest of the moon. And what these Russian scientists who wrote a paper about the moon being hollow in the 1970s concluded was that the craters do not blast out enough material. It's as if they're hitting something really solid, and where you see these mares, you're actually getting much closer to the skin of this surface. So whatever hits it, it's bouncing off of something that's a lot more solid than the regolith, which is the moon dust on the surface. And it's actually causing these craters to be very wide and shallow. They don't have any depth.
There are two Russian scientists saying that they believe that the moon was a constructed body. They thought that it was a planetoid that had been hollowed out, and everything that was going on, basically, apart from some stuff on the surface that fired the moon, going inside. What they were describing, long before it actually became fact in the Star Wars movies, was the Death Star. That's what they were describing in 1970.
So it's things like this that make certain astronomers think, and researchers, that, yeah, our moon is some kind of artificial satellite, like George Lucas' Death Star, put into our orbit around our planet. Not to destroy us, as in the Star Wars Death Star movies, but as a satellite to watch us and as literally a base to observe Earth.
And they reckoned that a very highly advanced race had hollowed out the moon. And therefore, because there's so many anomalies about the moon, it's unbelievable. Therefore, it can be explained why, as one NASA scientist said, the moon is inside.
Well, there's a number of anomalies on the moon's surface that suggest that it's hollow. First are the craters themselves. Some of them are hundreds of miles in diameter, which would mean that you would have a very deep crater. But in fact, the crater is quite shallow, nowhere near deep enough. If you actually have an asteroid or comet of some sort impacting the moon, creating 100 kilometer wide crater, you would expect the depth of that crater to go down 100 kilometers or more. But in fact, it only goes down much less than you would expect. I don't know the exact depth, but certainly enough that would make it very suspicious that beneath the moon's crust is a very hard exterior shell of some sort, some kind of metal that can withstand planetary impact by space debris, asteroids, and so forth. And so it's on the interior of the moon that you actually have huge bases. And, you know, there are things about the moon in terms of, you know, first of all, how can a body that is only a quarter the size of the Earth in diameter be captured by the Earth? I mean, in terms of conventional physics, it's not possible. It wouldn't be. It's too big. And then why would it be tidally locked? What that does is create an area of the moon, the far side, which can't be observed from the Earth. But for those on the moon that have advanced technologies, that have established bases underneath the moon, you know, they can have all their ships parked on the far side of the moon, visiting the Earth, doing whatever they need to do, monitoring the Earth, without us ever knowing what's there.
Although the artificial and hollow. Who did explain the many incongruities concerning the origins of the moon and how it arrived in Earth's orbit, there were other scientists looking at other data which caused them to rethink our lunar neighbor. Dr. Gordon MacDonald, a top scientist at NASA, said this in 1962, after studying the moon's motion.
If the astronomical data is reduced, it is found that the data require that the interior of the moon is less dense than the outer parts. Indeed, it would seem that the moon is more like a hollow than a homogeneous sphere.
Also, during the Apollo launches, the astronauts left seismometers on the surface of the moon. When the stage of the launcher fell to the surface, the seismometers changed for hours, indicating that the moon was hollow.
But one of the cases that's really, really fascinating is that on Apollo 16, they actually fired the lunar module, Orion, crashed it deliberately into the surface of the moon, and used the seismometers from the other landing sites to record what happened. And what happened is the moon basically rang like a bell for about 14 hours, which indicates that it is, for the most part, probably hollow. In other words, there are vast caverns of space inside the moon, which just is not a thing that you would have in a natural body. You would have everything compressed. There just wouldn't be these massive cavities inside.
In the 13th chapter of his book, The Moon, famed astronomer H.P. Wilkins says,
everything points to a more or less hollow nature of the crust within some 20 to 30 miles of the surface.
Dr. Sean C. Sullivan of MIT studied the gravitational fields of the moon via the Lunar Orbiter mission, and he concluded,
the Lunar Orbiter experiment vastly improved our knowledge of the moon's gravitational field, indicating the frightening possibility that the moon might be hollow.
When Apollo went to the moon, the astronauts took seismometers with them. Once set in place, the plan was to gauge the depth of the moon by reading the seismic activity that occurred after takeoff. The amount of force necessary to rocket the module away from the moon and back into orbit would send the ascent stage crashing down to the moon's surface, creating a fake moonquake. What happened next baffled everyone. The shockwave of the crash vibrated for over 55 minutes. The fact that the module hit the surface over 40 miles away Ewing, one of the scientists involved.
I'd rather not make an interpretation right now, but it is as though one struck a bell in the belfry of the church. A single bell, and found that the reverberation from it continued for 30 minutes. These experiments continue with the other Apollo missions, with the results powerfully said, the moon was ringing like a bell.
And of course, whenever NASA has smacked the moon,
with a serious impact. It has reacted, in their words, like a gong, like a bell, as if it was hollow.
Later, a NASA report would relate, the moon reacted like a gong. For about 3 hours, it vibrated, and these vibrations traveled to depths of 22 to 25 miles. This is exactly what the nuclear scientists were saying. The moon is hollow sphere, and the outside wall appears to be somewhere between 20 and 30 miles in depth.
The idea that the moon may be hollow is very scientifically sound, and there are actually multiple reasons why. First of all, we know that when various probes actually hit the moon, that there was a ringing tone, almost like a bell, that the ring lasted much, much longer than it should have done if the seismic profile of the moon's interior was in fact solid. The ring of the bell is much more consistent with the idea of a shallow, thin hull that is actually conveying those vibrations, because if you had all that mass inside the moon, it would cancel out the vibration much more quickly than what happened. So that is a very compelling notion.
There's some amazing evidence that suggests the moon may be hollow, and it comes from our own USGS.gov. We actually did our own radar imagery of the moon. Now, there's been a lot of speculation. Is it hollow? Is it not? It rang like a bell because we had seismic activity and we tapped it. But let me tell you, this is the best information you're ever going to hear. This USGS moon radar survey penetrated the surface of the moon. It's penetrating radar. So you download these official archive images and use it to see immediately the structures. And it's, I mean, anybody can see it. You don't need magnifying glass. You don't need any trickery. You don't need to adjust any set. All you have to do is download them and open them. So the proof that the moon may be hollow, besides the fact that it rang like a bell, we have seismic equipment there, is the fact that this USGS.gov radar survey, to me, is being done, that the moon is definitely hollow and there's structures beneath it.
So, in that whole sense of this hollow moon being some kind of artificial construct that's not even necessarily from our solar system. And early on, NASA actually said that. They said the moon was older than the Earth. And they came up with some startling conclusions, which NASA has kind of backed away from now. Even the orbit that the moon is in is an unusual orbit.
But is there anything found in our past that would indicate the moon is not what we think it is? Astronomer C.S. Chesapis analyzed the Orphic hymns. These are a group of writings attributed to the Greek god Orpheus. Chesapis concluded from his analysis that the Greeks of 4,000 years ago knew that the seasons were caused by the Earth's rotation around the sun and knew that there were torrid, temperate, and cold regions on the Earth. Because of this, the Orphic hymns required further examination. When we do this, it appears that Orpheus, the god, knew many esoteric things about the moon. When speaking of the moon, Orpheus, the son of Apollo, relates,
that it has many mountains and cities and houses in it. All who thought it to have solid ground like the earth, containing in it many large fields, champion grounds, and divine inhabitants.
Orpheus was known by his contemporaries to be called the Moon Man.
You look at the ancient tribes and the ancient accounts of various chroniclers who talk about the time the moon was there. And you look at the Zoro accounts and many other accounts which talk of the moon in terms of being symbolically an egg. And I talked to a Zulu shaman, high shaman called Kreta Mutwa, a long time ago. And I said to him, why do you symbolize the moon as an egg? And he said, because we say that it's been hollowed out, like a yolk taken out. That's why we symbolize it as egg, which is what these Russian scientists were talking about. Then you have the Zulu legends of where the moon came from, that the Chitahuri, as they call it,
the reptilian race, with two leaders called Rawani and Mpanku, stole the moon from the great python and basically positioned it where it is. And when you look at the descriptions of Rawani and Mpanku, the descriptions correlate with the descriptions of Enlil and Enki and the Anunnaki, descriptions of a non-human race visiting Earth that come from the area of Sumer and Mesopotamia.
Is there any ancestral evidence of the time on Earth before there was a moon? Aristotle writes that the Pelasgians lived in the area very old time, at a time when the moon did not exist. These inhabitants of Arcadia were also known as Proselenes, meaning those that were before the moon in Greek. Ovid wrote,
"The Arcadians are said to have possessed their land before the birth of Zeus, and the folk is older than the moon."
Symbols were discovered on the wall of the courtyard of Colossia, a temple which was built over 15,000 years ago. Colossia, which is in Bolivia, is one of the oldest archaeological sites found in the Americas. Symbols on the wall show evidence that the moon came into orbit around the Earth thousands of years ago. Moreover, the calendar gate, also known as the Gate of the Sun, located at the same site, provides evidence that a smaller satellite once rotated around the Earth. Some references to the time before there was a moon can also be found in the Bible. In Job 25:5, the grandeur of the Lord who makes peace in the heights is praised, and the time is mentioned before there was a moon and it did not shine. In Psalm 72:5, it is said, "Thou wast feared since the time of the sun and before the time of the moon, a generation of generations," which is a very long time. The memory of a world without a moon lives in oral tradition among the natives of the Amazon. The Indians of the Brigada Islands in the eastern Cordilleras of Colombia relate some of their tribal memories to a time before there was a moon. In the earliest times, when the moon was not yet in the heavens, say the tribesmen of the Chibchas. As we have seen, the moon, our close neighbor in space, may not be exactly what we think it is. There's serious evidence that NASA knows that the low density of the moon is evidence that it's hollow. There are also strange coincidences, like the fact that during a solar eclipse, the moon and our sun appear to be the same size. But there are many other odd aspects of our lunar cousin. In our next episode, we shall continue our exploration of the moon. Publicly that the towers form an Egyptian triangle. He says,
The distribution of these lunar objects is similar to the plan of the Egyptian pyramids near Cairo. The centers of the spheres in this lunar abaca are arranged precisely the same as the edges of the three pyramids.
NASA scientist Farouk Elbaz also hinted that he thought the towers were not natural. He said that they were taller than the tallest buildings on Earth, as calculated by tremendously long shadows they cast on the moon's surface. He also noted that the towers were much lighter in color than the surrounding area, and concluded that the towers were constructed of a different material. Almost immediately after the newspapers printed the story, NASA went into a full cover-up. They claimed it was a trick of light and shadow, and they ignored all further inquiries into the six towers. Art Rosenblum of the Aquarian Research Foundation met a scientist who worked for NASA. Rosenblum reports,
"He told me about the time of photographing the shadows of the obelisks. The Boeing Aircraft Corporation published the photo in their company newsletter. He had not seen it published since then. He also told me that by working for NASA, he found it uncommonly difficult to get information from them. If monuments have been discovered on the moon, one would suppose that that is about the most important result of the moon probe effort. Why is this information not widely publicized by NASA? Why are they not fully investigated? Where are they? What other types of information are being withheld? Why?"
The fact that this tower system was discovered in the Sea of Tranquility may be the impetus for NASA choosing that place to land Apollo 11 less than 3 years later.
There's a lot of evidence that suggests the moon itself might actually be artificial or a possibly artificially modified natural satellite. In addition to that, there are all kinds of structures on the moon itself which appear to be artificial, which indicate that at one time it was a base for a very advanced civilization. It may have been human, may have been alien, may have been both. There may have been multiple epochs of inhabitation of the moon. But the moon's actual diameter also happens to be the number of years in an age of the zodiac. And as Hancock wrote in Fingerprints of the Gods in 1995, you have 35 different cultures in the ancient world that encoded the precession, this 25,000-year cycle, into their mythology. And 12 ages of the zodiac adds up to the 25,920-year cycle. So it would appear that the moon was designed for a particular purpose.
Scientists have asked the question, what would life on Earth be like without a moon? The answer to this question is troubling. Without a moon, there would be very little tidal flow. The rivers in the oceans that bring hot equatorial water to the polar regions and back would disappear. Also, the moon has slowed our planetary rotation. So if we had no moon, the days would speed up. The moon also locks the planet into a 23.5-degree tilt, which gives us seasons. If the moon were here, the planet would begin to rotate at different angles, and this would cause the weather to become very weird. For instance, the polar regions would move into the hot zones, and then all of the ice caps would melt.
Because the gravitational effects of the moon and creating tides and things like that is what created life on Earth. And so until we had this moon in orbit around our planet, there couldn't really be life here as we know it.
In his book, The Secret Teachings of All Ages, Manly P. Hall tells us about the rites of the Druid people from Ireland. He says,
"The Druids also had other symbolic instruments, such as a peculiarly shaped golden sickle with which they cut the mistletoe from the oak and the cornan, or scepter, in the form of a crescent, symbolic of the sixth day of the increasing moon and the Ark of Noah. To their midnight ceremonies was gained by means of a glass boat called Kirgal Gudrun. This boat symbolized the moon, which, floating on the waters of eternity, preserved the seeds of living creatures within its boat-like crescent."
This ties in very nicely with the testimony of Bill Tompkins, who confirmed what we'd heard from many other insiders, which is that the moon is, in fact, an old, old, old Noah's Ark on a planetary scale. The most current data that we have suggests that the moon was brought here right during the time of the death of the dinosaurs about 65 million years ago. It is now very likely that something was done deliberately to wipe out the dinosaurs.
And then you come back to modern times, to people like William Tompkins from this naval intelligence on top secret operation interacting with extraterrestrials. And he's talking about the moon being the command center for a reptilian race. And again, if you keep connecting the dots, you keep looking ancient and modern, the body of evidence that you can create that gives you a picture, from the pixels comes the picture, is absolutely extraordinary and explains so much about life on Earth.
If you listen to Corey Good's testimony, he is of the belief that there was, in fact, a sentient reptilian or saurian humanoid that was starting to form on Earth, and that certain ETs were worried about how that would affect all the other human planets around us that are actually much more like us. And so, for whatever reason, these gardeners decided to terminate those dinosaurs. And at that time, apparently, the moon system to another, possibly using portals that naturally occur as a way to skip over a lot of distance. But it had a propulsion system, it had a weapon system, it was fully capable of defending itself, and I've heard from multiple insiders that there are as many as 10,000 different floors inside the moon, 10,000 levels, which are in many cases built all the way through from one side to the other. The amount to which the build-out occurs in any one area has to do with how much raw material there is that these nanorobots could use to actually structure it out, because it was all done by an automated process.
Everything I've seen on the moon is in ruins. That doesn't mean it's not inhabited, because the fact is that the best place you could possibly have a base to operate around the Earth, if you were working on Earth or you wanted to move out into the solar system from the Earth, would be on the moon. Now, I've seen lots of videos of craft traveling from the moon that appear to be settling me, and my guess would be that the moon is inhabited. I can't put any proof on that, but I can prove to you that it has been inhabited. So if one has happened, then it follows that the other is distinctly probable.
Now, what would these 10,000 levels inside the moon be used for? They're used to take organisms from a given planet, to store them if that planet becomes non-viable for life, to transport them somewhere else where they can then be dropped off. The moon is just like the apocryphal story of Noah's Ark in the Bible, except that it's on a much larger scale than how we would normally think of it. So now we have a possibility of looking at the idea that the biosphere we see on Earth, with plants that have green chlorophyll to process sunlight, that we have a biota of insects, we have a biota of marine organisms, and there's all these ecosystems in which smaller organisms can be used for food by larger organisms, and life becomes more complex, so that in a sense, the biosphere we see on Earth may be, if not ubiquitous throughout the universe or our galaxy, at least very prevalent. So we're going to see the same types of life. So what we may have had at the fall of the dinosaurs was the moon gets brought in, it gets put into orbit around the Earth, at which time it jumpstarts seasons. So now we don't have a desert planet anymore. We've got the seasons and the tides caused by the moon, which creates much more diversity in the climate, so that we don't have a desert planet that only reptilians can live on. Now we have a mammalian supporting planet, and the mammalian life that they wanted to be here was already stored inside the moon, waiting to be dropped off. This is what the insider research has concluded, and that the moon was on its last legs, and it was damaged, so that when it got off to Earth 65 years ago, it's never going to be able to go anywhere again. The problem, however, is that inside the moon was a very, very powerful supercomputer. And it was believed at the time that that supercomputer could not be hacked. However, what we had developed later in our solar system, much later, was a civilization with the planet Tiamat or Maldek, which was the super Earth that then blew up and became the asteroid belt, and Mars, which at that time was also a captured gravitational moon that was Earth-like as well and had an ocean.
While many researchers believe that the Earth did not always have a moon, some think it was moved here in more recent times.
Well, there is a book by Emmanuel Bolokhovsky which talks about the moon being an object which is only a part of our recent history. He has quoted a number of ancient historians, Herodotus amongst them, and others, that refer to pre-cultures. These were people who described times before the moon, where they still had the memories of the night sky, not having a moon at all. And at some point, the moon arrived. And so dating that, I would say it's anywhere within the last 50,000 years in terms of when oral traditions began and were eventually recorded and transcribed in some way. So up to 55, 60,000 years ago, I think that's when the moon arrived. And that the moon arrived as an artificial body with refugees from a wider cataclysm that had occurred elsewhere in the solar system. I think that the whole exploded planet hypothesis of Thomas Van Flandern, I think that's very accurate in terms of showing how the asteroid belt was very likely a planet at one point in its history, and the destruction of a planet would require some artificial process that would require a war, and a war would by necessity involve advanced civilization with the technology that could blow up a planet. And so that to me suggests that it's very feasible that that the moon was at some point a satellite of this exploded planet. And interestingly, in Thomas Van Flandern's paper, The Exploded Planet Hypothesis, he hypothesizes that Mars was also one of the moons of this planet, and that the conflict could have involved Mars at a time when it was very green, very fertile, in a war with the inhabitants of this exploded planet, a super-Earth, really. So this super-Earth was exploded or had exploded because probably some kind of technology that tapped the planet's core was used that went awry. And so Mars is blown off course and the moon starts to drift and eventually finds its way to Earth. I don't think the Earth has the sufficient size to capture the moon, given its size. I mean, our gravity isn't strong enough. So the moon was basically artificially directed into the orbit around the Earth. And I think it is an artificial body that arrived carrying a lot of refugees from this ancient cataclysm. And from there, they began to develop a global civilization, which later on became known as Atlantis.
David Wilcock has been on the trail of this mystery for a long time. He has talked to many insiders who have told him what's really going on inside the moon.
This Mars civilization, if we want to call it that, apparently got infested by pathogenic AI, artificial intelligence. And that AI wanted to get a nice big mainframe. Somehow that AI was able to hack the moon. And apparently the moon is now the central mainframe for this AI across many, many, many different star systems. The moon is where it has the CPU. It uses that processing power for all of the individual pieces of AI. They all are tapping into that like a cloud computing system where they're all accessing that central brain. And that is a very disturbing thing also, because apparently the top elites of that Mars society downloaded their souls and their consciousness into the moon. And there may still be billions of these people living in a virtual reality inside the moon, seeking to use AI to create robotic forms that they could then reoccupy. So there may in fact be some desire for these warlords to create a robotic society that they could then infest by using those robots as avatars so they could once again be alive.
We are being assimilated. It's a process, step by step by step. And to do it, our perception has to be hijacked, and our sense of self has to be hijacked. Where I'm coming from is that we are a point of attention. When I say we, I mean at the deepest level of perception of being. Beyond all the garments we call bodies and even electromagnetic fields, we are a state of awareness, nothing else. And all these vehicles that awareness experiences through are simply means of experience. And what has happened, and this is described in many
ancient texts, is that that state of awareness, that infinite self, that which all of us are an expression of, we're all points of attention within the one infinite awareness, has been perceptually enslaved in a state of perception that I call phantom self. That is the perception that who we are is our name, our race, our religion, our life story, our background, our job, our income bracket, and that's who we are. Now, this perceptional delusion of mistaking an experience for infinite self or true self means that you, first of all, perceptually squeeze the sense of the possible. You present people that fall for that with a sense of little me, I've got no power, and a sense of I can't. Because if you take most people in their perceptions of self and their perceptions of reality, they'll say, well, what can I do? There's nothing we can do. And if you are then persuaded that you have no power, then you give the power you really have, but don't know about, to authority over you. And that perception of authority has power and we don't, then creates another level of the control system. And we are being manipulated. This is a much bigger story. We are being manipulated to a point where we are attached technologically to artificial intelligence technology.
What I've heard from multiple insiders is that the moon has this ability to influence us. We know, for example, that the full moon, for some reason, creates a lot of aggressiveness and psychosis and difficult behavior, and this has been proven. We have statistics from the Canadian Royal Mounted Police, statistics out of New Zealand, several places where they've actually done the study, and they've even requested that their departments get financed for more staff during the full moon because they already know there's going to be more violent crime during that time. And they made formal requests and did the data and crunched the numbers and showed through criminology, yes, this is what's happening. So why do people get so upset? Why does violence and psychopathic behavior go up when the moon is full? I don't think that what we're looking at here is strictly a function of the light from the moon, the visible light. What it appears is going on is that when the moon is full, we're actually dealing with a situation where you have a straight line path between the sun, the earth, and the moon. And that straight line path is what we would call an alignment. Now, this alignment has something a lot deeper going on than just whether the moon looks bright or not. It has to do with the fact that there are these unseen field or scalar waves that then become the most powerful, where it rings the moon like a tuning fork. And there's this hidden energy, the spin in gravity is what the Russians defined it as, that is actually causing there to be a much stronger connection between whatever consciousness is in the moon and whatever consciousness is on Earth. So if there are all these very dark and evil beings inside the moon in this virtual AI form, then when the moon is full, they have a greater ability to telepathically influence us. And what are they doing? This type of situation is where beings, whether physical or whether artificial, can in fact use the energy of violence, the energy of terrorism, the energy of depression, fear, jealousy, sadness, materialism, as a working, tangible energy source. It's often called loosh, this idea that loosh is generated when we have pain and fear and sorrow. And there's very, very good science to support that because, for example, when people are afraid, they send their energy to the alpha male at the front of the cave.
So don't be afraid. Deal with it. Thanks for listening. I appreciate it. Appreciate you listening.